It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about self-love.
Feeling like you're different from your peers can have a big impact on your self-acceptance. But as Miriam Brabham of Green Bay tells us, a nurturing community helped her learn how to love her hair. She shares her story as part of the Home Is Here project, which amplifies the voices of the growing number of Black, Asian, Native American, and Hispanic residents who call northeastern Wisconsin home.
When I was young, I hated my hair. It spent most of its time tightly pulled into lopsided buns, surrounded by a halo of curly flyaways. In those early years, my curls were traumatized. They were dehydrated and unappreciated, and they were a visual reminder of what I didn't know and how I didn't fit in. As a multi-ethnic Black girl who was also a Messianic Jew, 9-year-old me saw my curls as yet another thing that othered me. At a North Chicago YMCA, I would watch the other girls after swim class with envy. Passing small combs through their wet, straight hair, they would sigh and huff as they started from the top of their heads and found resistance at the ends. These girls would finish detangling their whole head in 5 minutes. After swim class, I didn't have time to wash my thick hair. While the smell of Pantene and Suave filled the air, I used the water to help me gather my curls into an outstretched scrunchie. These rebellious curls, stinking of chlorine and a lack of information, would begin to clump together into impossible knots, almost as if they were so suffocated by the world that they coiled together for comfort. I hated my hair. It was time, effort, and a major contributor to my imposter syndrome collection. Not white enough, not Black enough, not Jewish enough, and yet too much. As I got older, the war with my hair became bitter. Temporary dyes, perms, and massive amounts of heat were met with split ends, chemical burns, and tension alopecia. Big chop after big chop left me at a shady hair braiding salon under the tracks on the north side of Chicago, where a woman used nail glue instead of hair glue and some overpriced box braids. Cutting out multiple braids, explaining why you shouldn't say good hair, and having monoracial people laugh at my ignorance left trauma residue all over my coils. The age of peace began when I started talking nice to my hair, instead of verbally berating it and subsequently myself. I learned so much about my hair while studying abroad in Botswana, Africa. The people were not shy or reserved in their comments and suggestions. They also didn't see me as separate from themselves. I just didn't know how to do my hair. The Botswana people taught me to love myself and my hair. I began to see my curls as an intrinsic part of myself. These curls can be playful springs that bounce in a sweet summer breeze. They can be strong, wide coils that keep the moisture to themselves and observe the world from scarves that set them on high. These curls can refuse to be tamed. They can go their own way, laughing at edge control and headbands alike. They can lay gently around my face. These curls define themselves and can easily change depending on the day and humidity. They have personality, and not shockingly, it's very similar to my own. So yes, there is trauma wrapped up in these curls. But like trauma in any of us, I am healing with love, time, and hair oil.
Miriam Brabham is a multicultural student success manager at UW Green Bay. And her story is part of the Home Is Here project from the New News Lab, a local news collaboration in northeastern Wisconsin made up of 6 media organizations, including WPR and the Green Bay Press Gazette. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A group that tracks nationwide animal shelter trends says summer months are typically slow for adoptions, but shelters continue to struggle with overcapacity. We learn about the situation in Wisconsin as animal rescue groups seek to find homes for dogs in our state. And you can call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Karen Walsh is Senior Director of Animal Relocation at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Karen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you.
Good morning, Jen Olenketo as well, Dog Team Manager at the Oshkosh Area Humane Society. Jen, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Jen. Let's start with you. The Oshkosh Animal Shelter being at or near capacity with dogs for more than a year. Dog adoptions are at historic lows. What is happening?
We're seeing a lot of factors contributing to this right now. We think COVID kind of was a really nice, it seemed really nice when it was not COVID, but obviously people were home. They went to adopt animals. Mm-hmm. We were in a really good spot. We had breathing room. We were able to help who needed help. Everyone was home. They were with their animals. But when things started opening up again, we saw this kind of shift. People's lives essentially started up again. A lot of them moved. They got new jobs. They had some life changes. And some of them realized they didn't have time or means for their animals anymore. So we did see an influx of owner surrender requests. We've seen an increase in unclaimed stray dogs. That has been a huge increase. Dog return to owner rates, meaning the dogs that come in as strays but are redeemed by their owners, is typically around 78%. Right now we're hovering around 63 to 65%. So people just aren't able or aren't, they aren't getting their dogs back.
So people's, you're going to say another issue going on.
One more, we're seeing a real increase in, kind of desperation surrender requests. And this is stemming from homelessness. This is stemming from evictions. This is stemming from landlord restrictions being increased. It seems like finding affordable housing for people that will allow pets is becoming really difficult to come by. So we've received an astronomical number of people saying, I can't find a place that will take my dog. I have no other options. I don't know what to do.
Confluence of issues here. Karen, as you hear what Jen is saying from the ground in Wisconsin, does that echo what you're seeing nationwide?
Yes, some of it does. Lots of communities are dealing with problems following COVID that, as Jennifer was describing, have been things that we haven't seen in a long time. We've sort of gone back in time with the number of animals that are needing to be managed through the sheltering system. A lot of people are working on programs in their community for the types of things that Jennifer was describing, increasing the amount of food in their food banks and helping people keep pets in their homes, meeting with their landlords, talking with their local councils, and trying to get people to be more supportive of the needs for animals with people in their homes. So, yes, a lot of those things are things that we're hearing, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country.
And the group Shelter Animals Count, they keep track of what is going on, saying dog adoptions down across the country. How is this trend affecting efforts by your organization to transfer dogs to shelters?
So we've changed how we're managing transport in our program. It used to be that before COVID even, we would be transporting full truckloads of animals to shelters and then increasing the diversity in their population. So oftentimes in communities, shelters end up with a lot of one type of animal. Large dogs is what a lot of people are talking about at the moment as being more stuck in shelters. And bringing in some diversity in the population often increases the foot traffic that's coming to your shelter. They see on the Facebook page or wherever that there are some puppies coming from a certain location, and they're excited about that, and they come in. But then they might start to think, wow, this puppy's going to be a lot of work, and maybe I'm not ready for that. And they'll select one of the large dogs from the local community that's waiting instead. But with our program where we used to bring full trucks, now we've split up into going to multiple destination shelters with smaller amounts of animals so that it doesn't overwhelm their population. It specifically fits the needs that they're seeing.
Jen, what is your intake like right now as you look at groups who are asking, you know, to bring animals to your shelter in Oshkosh?
Yes, so we used to take transfers in fairly often. We worked with a group in Texas that we would take dogs from. I believe the last time we took animals from them was well over a year ago. We have had to, you know, just tell shelters in southern states, we just really do not have the capacity because it seems like the influx from our local area is not slowing down. We have a surrender request waiting list of over 24 dogs right now. And we are trying to direct people to different options, like trying to rehome on their own. We have a rehoming page on our website, trying to help them describe their animal in the best light while still being transparent. We're trying to give options to people to either rehome their animal on their own or try to keep their animal. We have received some behavioral grants if it is a manageable behavior condition that they are struggling with. We can offer help in that area as well. I think our biggest obstacle right now are the people that are moving that can't find affordable pet-friendly housing.
How are pet fostering situations, pet fostering homes that keep, you know, these dogs for a shorter stay, are they at capacity as well?
We are constantly trying to expand our foster program. You know, she mentioned that the majority of dogs in shelters, at least for sure in our shelter, are larger, active dogs. Most dogs come in between the ages of a year and 4 years. That's when they are no longer tiny, adorable puppies. They are either adolescents or just coming into adulthood. And, you know, it's a lot when you have a large active dog. And if you didn't have the time to give them the socialization and training before, it's just their cute little behavioral quirks aren't so cute when they're 70 pounds jumping. So that's the population we're seeing. And yes, those dogs do sit longer. We are trying to expand our foster program. Even with that, we do struggle because people do want smaller dogs. Not everybody is comfortable with the larger dogs. They can't always meet their exercise needs, which we try to be reassuring about. Just getting out of the shelter is great. But we are slowly expanding our foster program, just not really fast enough to keep up with the intake.
Jen Olenketo there, who is Oshkosh Area Humane Society's dog team manager. Karen Walsh heads up animal relocation at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And you can be part of this conversation. Call in with a question. Share your perspective on animal adoptions. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore this nationwide slump in animal adoptions and the view from Wisconsin as rescue groups find new ways to successfully place dogs into permanent homes. Call in with a question. Share your experience. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jen Olenketo is dog team manager at Oshkosh Area Humane Society, and Karen Walsh is here, leads animal relocation at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Karen, we heard from Susan in Eagle River, called in to ask if there is any hope for banning puppy mills, which Susan says is contributing to the abundance of dogs needing homes.
So that we have a whole team that manages that particular issue. And yes, I mean, I think across the country, there are people becoming much more aware of puppy mills and understanding that we're not anti-breeder by any means. If someone is responsibly breeding animals for the betterment of that breed, then we support that. But if people are breeding animals as a money-making venture for themselves, and they're breeding multiple different kinds of breeds on their property, and they're often overwhelmed by the amount of population that they're trying to take care of, internet sales, those sorts of things, that's really what our relocation program is supporting, is a variety of animals to help people not turn to puppy mills for their dogs or to the internet for their dogs, because it's very important to know where those animals come from and how they're being treated at the location that is breeding them or selling them. And oftentimes people don't know that. Websites can be very deceiving, and getting animals where you don't actually know where they're coming from or you haven't been to that location can be very heartbreaking for people, and supports a very negative industry towards dogs.
Jen, your insights. Are puppy mills an issue in Wisconsin and for shelters in our state?
Yes, absolutely they are. I belong to a group on Facebook that connects shelters and rescues across Wisconsin. We did recently get an kind of a call out. One of the puppy mills in our area contacted us. They said if we don't take all these dogs that they can't sell, they're going to do horrible things that I won't mention. Some of them do reach out to rescues and basically hold them emotionally hostage. If you don't take this huge influx of dogs, we're going to dispatch them as we see fit. It absolutely is a problem. The internet, while it's great and social media has so many benefits, it's also kind of been horrible for animals because people can literally just post a dog or a cat and be like, I need to rehome this, PM me, I'll meet you at a gas station. People can get dogs and cats and other animals as quick as a click. They can meet somebody. They don't know if the person is telling the truth. We've had calls from people that said, I got this dog. They said he was good with other dogs and cats, and he attacked my dog. I need to get rid of it. It's just a real lack of transparency. People aren't finding information out about these animals that they're getting online. They just see a picture. And it's caused real problems as well. We're getting animals from that situation as when people find out the dog is not fitting in with their family because they weren't given any information about it.
Let's take a call. Kathy in Maguanago. Kathy, hi.
Hi. I was just mentioning to the young man that I have firsthand knowledge of the humane societies up in northern Wisconsin. Not only do they have too many animals, including dogs, but they do not have enough employees to take care of these animals. So the animals are not getting the proper attention they should once they get them into the rescue area. So I don't know. That's another issue that they're having. So I'm not sure how to rectify that, but I think that's, and people quit instantaneously when they realize how much work they have to do with these dogs and these shelters.
Kathy, thank you for bringing that up. Karen, are animal shelters facing staffing shortages as we see in other professions?
Yes, absolutely, they are. Capacity for care is something that we talk about in sheltering, and it's relative to the amount of money that you have, to the amount of staffing that you have, and to the amount of space that you have. So the capacity of a shelter isn't just about the number of kennels in the shelter, it's also about the number of people that are able to care for animals. A lot of shelters are really leaning on their foster networks right now and on their volunteers because staffing is a challenge. It is hard to find people that are willing to work consistently in shelters. And we also saw that during the time of COVID, when the population numbers in shelters were down, a lot of people went to work for shelters and they thought that that was the norm. And this change post-COVID of having more animals to care for and more struggles has driven some people away from working in the shelters. So definitely all the shelters need their volunteers, their fosters, and any people that are willing to dedicate their lives or so some time, some years to this work.
I need a robust network. Karen Welsh there at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Jen Olenketo at the Oshkosh Area Humane Society. You can join in 800-642-1234. Jen, the Global No Kill Network lists almost 100 shelters here in Wisconsin that avoid euthanizing animals. How do shelters that are over capacity avoid euthanizing animals to make room for more rescues?
It really truly is a community effort. Again, foster homes are a huge component of, saving more animals. I've never really cared for the term no kill myself because I feel like people polarize the shelters into kill and no kill. People will ask if we are a no kill, and our shelter does euthanize animals if they are a danger to public health. If they are have a history of aggression, we can't ethically place that animal in a home. Or B, if they have an unmanageable medical condition that cannot be treated or managed, resulting in a poor quality of life. So I have no qualms about shelters that do have to euthanize for space, because a lot of them can't control their influx. A lot of them have stray contracts, as we do, and we have to take stray animals. We have to. We have a contract with our city, so we can't control the influx of animals all the time. So there's that component as well.
Well, thank you both for sharing the situation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Welsh, Senior Director of Animal Relocation for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and Jen Olenketo, who is Dog Team Manager at the Oshkosh Area Humane Society. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.